The morning today is daf in Shabbos Pei Vav. We're starting today at the Mishnah on the very top of Pei Vav. And Aleph, the Mishnah is going to be continuing. Here in the ninth parak, we have been in this ninth parak now for a number of days. And the ninth parak took us on a detour. We left Masechta Shabbos and we entered into a number of different areas of halacha, all of them not being related to Shabbos. And the question becomes, why? Well, we already addressed this question, so I'm just going to quickly review. And that is the Tosfos back on Pei Beis Amud Aleph, at the beginning of the Perek. Tosfos writes on the top of the Amud, the first Tosfos on Pei Beis Amud Aleph, that the Mishnah over here is following the pattern that was set by the last Mishnah of the 8th Perek. In the 8th Perek, the Mishnayos were talking about how much one needs to carry in order to be Mechal Shabbos, the Shiurim for Hotza'ah, and the Mishnah, at the very end of the 8th Perek, brings down a debate regarding cheres, how much earthenware needs to be carried on Shabbos in order to be chayev. So the Mishnah says here we can find a remez in Navi, even though obviously the psukim in Navi are not describing the shiurim of Hotza'ah, but nevertheless there is a remez, an allusion, as reading the pasuk in Yeshayahu in the 30th parak, in terms of how much cheres one needs to carry, what is going to be a significant amount of cheres. So, as Tosfos explains, what the Mishnayos do from that point going forward is that it states a halacha, not related to Shabbos, it states a halacha, and it finds a remez to that in the psukim in the Navi, or as we'll see in this Mishnah coming up, even in Chumash. Meaning, even though the pasuk itself, kipshuto, the simple pshat, is not relating to that particular halacha, but it alludes to the halacha that's mentioned in the Mishnah. And so the topics that we covered were extraordinarily broad. Our first Mishnah that we dealt with back at the beginning of the ninth parak had to do with the fact that the Chachamim were giving a status of Tumah to Avodah Zarah. So Avodah Zarah, aside from being Asur Bahanah, Minah Torah, but the Chachamim added to that an Isur Tumah, or actually not an Isur Tumah, but the idea of Tumah is added to the Isur. So that is the first topic which took some time to go through. Our next topic which we covered on Pei Gimel Amud Beis is the idea that a boat is impervious to Tumah. Why should that be? So there's an allusion to that in the Pasuk in Mishlei, Derech Aniya B'Lev Yam, and the Gemara discussed the boat for nearly a full daf. On Pei Dal Amud Beis, yesterday's daf, so the going to Pei Hay, the Gemara discussed the aruga, the patch of the vegetable patch. A vegetable patch can be planted with a certain configuration, and it's alluded to in the Navi. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu in the 61st parak gives an allusion to this idea that when you have a patch that is 6 by 6 tefachim, you can plant 5 different seeds. So this was yesterday's daf. So again, the idea that I have a halacha, and it's alluded to in the Navi. And here now, as we start the Mishnah on today's daf, and Pei Vav Amud Aleph, so we're going to continue along that trend. Here in this Mishnah, we're going to go over 4 different halachas, which are, in fact, going to follow this construct of a halacha, and a rem is alluded to in the psukim. Also, by the way, just one other highlight before we start with the Mishnah, and that is the first Rashi on the Perek. The first Rashi on the Perek says that there's also another reason why the Mishnayos are trending in this direction, because one of the halachas that we're going to see in our Mishnah coming up in today's daf is going to be related to Shabbos. So eventually it does snake its way back to the halachas of Shabbos that is coming up in our Mishnah, and Rashi says that's also another reason why the Mishnahs follow this pattern. But as Tosfos points out in the beginning of the parak, that's a little bit strange, because if the whole reason why we're segueing over here into all these other topics is because of the upcoming Mishnah, which we're going to see, why wasn't that Mishnah mentioned first? And then all these other examples mentioned afterwards, that was one of Tosfos' questions that Tosfos had on Rashi. With all that stated, let's begin our Mishnah. Our Mishnah now goes over 4 different halachas. Halacha number 1. In order to appreciate the halacha number 1, we're going to go over that which we learned in Masechta Nida. And that is the following. When talking about Shechva Zera, that is the semen coming out of a man, so that is going to be a source of Tumah. The Zera itself is going to be a source of Tumah. We learned back in Masechta Nida that as long as the Zera is moist, it is going to be a source of Tumah. On top of that, a man and woman having relations also is going to create Tumah. We discussed this also back in Masechta Nida. On top of that, the zera that's inserted into the woman and eventually is leaking out, so that also is going to make her Tumah as well. And how long is it going to make her tame? So let's just divide these halachas up. When the zera comes out of a man, so the zera itself is going to be a source of tumah, and that continues as long as it is moist. We will be learning that a little bit later on this morning, but the halacha is very clear that when gauging zera as being a source of tumah, as long as it's moist, it's going to be a source of tumah. However, when inserted into the woman, so then you have to take the following into consideration. While absorbed inside of the woman, so then it's not going to be tame at all. This is the idea of tumah blua, which we discussed many times. When the tumah is absorbed, it's not going to be a source of tumah. As it discharges out of the woman, it will become tame. However, here, the threshold of when it becomes tame, when or not, is not going to be a function of moisture. It'll be a function of how long can it remain potent inside the woman. And as we'll be discussing in the course of today's daf, we're going to say 3 days. Now, the specifics we're going to go over over the course of today's daf. But we'll say right now, 3 days it remains potent inside the woman. And that means that after 3 days, as it leaks out, post 3 days after they had relations, after husband and wife had relations, the zera is no longer considered potent. It was inside of her. The heat that the woman generates, the internal heat that is generated by the woman, is going to remove the potency of that zera after 3 days. And 3 days right now, I'm saying in somewhat of a vague term, and you'll see why 3 days it needs to be further defined and clarified. So, why is that important la halacha? So, for a number of reasons. One, simply because the zera that comes out of the woman is going to be a source of tumah. If it comes out within 3 days of relations. That's number one. Number two, if the woman is let's say, for example, she's a Zava Gadola. A Zava Gadola needs to count Shiv Nakim, 7 clean days. 7 clean days means that it has to be free and clear of any tumah. So that means to say, let's say she becomes a Zava Gadola, and she's trying to count her Shiv Nakim, and that Zera comes out, that Zera is going to be a disruption of her Shiv Nakim, and she will not be counting 7 consecutive days if the zera in fact comes out post-relations. We of course assume that she will be discharging zera. So that means to say then, that while trying to count Shiv Nakiyim, if she knows she had relations within the last 3 days, so that means to say that she cannot count her Shiv Nakiyim, because that zera that comes out of her is going to be a disruption of her Shiv Nakiyim. Okay, so this is all very basic information that we need to know in order to appreciate the first halacha of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah we're going to read inside. Minan lepalat ha-shech v'zera b'yam ha-shlishi. Shehi Temeya, how do I know that a woman discharging the Zera, this is now after having relations with her, and it comes out even on the 3rd day that she will be Temeya, Shenemar, Ayuna Chonim, El Shoshes Yamim. Now the source of this is going to be Mamad Har Sinai. Now it happens to be that the Daf Yomi almost coordinates perfectly with the time that we're in. We happen to have just went through Shavuos, and Shavuos of course represents Kabbalah Satara and Mamad Har Sinai. And that is going to be the source of the halacha vis-a-vis Palat HaShech VaZera. What do the two have to do with one another? You probably know. We're going to go over it. We're going to start the discussion today in great detail. And tomorrow, the Gemara is going to go over it in extraordinary detail of how the two are connected. Next halacha in the Mishnah. How do I know that you bathe a baby on the 3rd day after the baby had its bris, baby boy, obviously. So how do you know that you're going to be bathing the baby in hot water? And even if that 3rd day comes out on a Shabbos, back then it was understood that a baby is post-surgery after the Mila. And days 1, 2, and 3 are days in which are critical for the baby's health and care and well-being. And so therefore, what you need to do back then is you needed to boil water and bathe the baby in that boiling water, and not in the boiling water. In other words, the boiling of the water probably was to sterilize the water. That's my best guess. But you needed to boil the water in order to care for the baby. And even if the 3rd day comes out on Shabbos, and on Shabbos, obviously, cooking is a malacha, but it's for the purposes of care of this critical baby. So therefore, you could do so even on Shabbos. And Rashi over here says, it goes without saying that it's true on days 1 and 2 as well. Over here, we're extending it even to the 3rd day after the bris. Shenamar, the pasuk says, "Vayiba yamashashi biyosem koavim." So it's on the 3rd day when they were in the most pain. Now this is talking about Shechem, and the incident with Shimon and Levi in Shechem, but you see on the third day that these people were still in tremendous pain. It was the third day post-surgery, post-bris milah. Over there, it's dealing with adults. We're talking about a baby, but the Gemara assumes that the halacha is going to be the same. The third halacha of the Mishnah, minayin shekoshin lashon shezaharis berosh se'ir ha-mishalech. How do I know that I'm going to affix a red strap onto the head of the goat that is going to be sent off the cliff on Rosh Hashanah? And also, I'm going to take a portion of that red strip, and I'm also going to tie it. Now, where is that other portion going to be tied to? So the Gemara in Yuma, the Mishnah in Yuma, tells us that it was not secured into one location. It's based on the fact that it used to be that when the Jewish people's sins were forgiven, so the red strip is going to turn white, as we're going to see an allusion to that in the Pasuk and the Navi. And at a certain period in Jewish history, it turned white all the time. So therefore, the Jews were able to see and visualize their sins becoming expunged on Yom Kippur. However, there were years where it did not turn white. And so therefore, they moved around the other strip from location to location because it came a point in time where it didn't turn white. And they simply didn't want it to be public that the sins were not readily forgiven on Yom Kippur. Anyway, so where the other red strip was tied to, sometimes it was tied to the entrance in the Beis HaMikdash, the entrance of the Ulam, but then at other historical periods of time, it was just taken together with the Ish Iti, and it was simply tied on the rock. So only he was able to see it either turn or not turn from red to white. Anyway, where's the allusion? In other words, this idea is not articulated in the Torah, so where's the allusion to this? Shenamar, the pasuk says in the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu, "Im yuchateichem kashanim, kashela galbinu." So if your sins are going to be like red, so they will whiten like snow. So this idea that the red strip will turn from red into white, assuming that the averus are going to be in fact expunged on Yom Kippur. And finally, the last halacha of this Mishnah, minan lesicha shikishtia biyom kippur. How do I know that rubbing? That rubbing oil is tantamount to drinking on Yom Kippur. And just like on Yom Kippur, one is not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. One is not allowed to rub oil into their skin as well. That is also a form of imbibing. So the Torah itself never articulates that you're not allowed to do this. To be quite frank with everyone, the Torah never actually articulates that one is not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. The Torah just simply says, V'inisem es nafsho sechem, that on Yom Kippur, one is supposed to afflict themselves. And the understanding, of course, is that the abstention of eating and drinking certainly is inui. That's clear. But what about rubbing oil into your skin? That's also going to be a form of inui, and where do we see that? So once again, it is not clearly articulated, but we do have a remez. Shenemar, the pasuk says, in Tehillim v'tavo kamayim v'kirbo, u'cheshemen ba'atzmosav, that the water goes into his skin and the oil into his bones. And this idea that the absorption of oil is tantamount to that of drinking water. As Tosfos over here points out, the pasuk is really talking more like bathing and not drinking, so it's a remez. It's exactly the point, meaning it's not a clear articulation, neither in Chumash nor in Navi, that rubbing oil into your skin is like drinking, but it's at least an allusion to this idea. And obviously that means then that rubbing oil into your skin is going to be one of the inuyim, one of the ways that we afflict ourselves on Yom Kippur. There's a number of lengthy discussions on this last one. I'll briefly mention it. Number one, we know the Yinum and Yom Kippur, there are five in total, as mentioned in the Mishnah, at the end of Masechta Yuma. So eating and drinking is a Issur D'Oraisa on Yom Kippur. That part's clear. When we're to eat and drink, it'd be a violation of Inui, meaning the Torah says to afflict. And if we eat and we drink on Yom Kippur, so that is going to be the opposite of afflicting, meaning we are removing the inui, and that's an Issur D'Oraisa. That part's clear. What about the other inuim? Are they also going to be Issuri D'Oraisa? That's not clear. The Rishonim debate that. And over here, you could see in our Mishnah at least certainly an allusion to this idea, because our Mishnah says that all we have is really a remez that tells us that rubbing oil into your skin is like drinking. But it is not a clear connection. Nowhere in Navi does it say that clearly. And so therefore, it could very well be that rubbing oil into your skin is not an Issur D'Oraisa. It is still absolutely forbidden on Yom Kippur. But in terms of the level of Issur, It could be an issur d'oraisa, just know there's no punishment of karis, or it could be that it's not issur d'oraisa, it's an issur d'rabbanan. Anyway, that is one discussion to be had, not during the daf, but that's one discussion. And a secondary discussion is that once we have this idea that rubbing into your skin and your skin absorbing something is tantamount to eating, so are you allowed to rub and absorb forbidden foods into your skin? So chela, for example, so let's say you take fat, which many of the soaps are made out of, and you take the fats of an animal, so can you rub that into your skin? If we're taking our Mishnah seriously, which of course we do, so then that would mean, presumably, that one is not allowed to rub forbidden fats into your skin, because that's like imbibing, that's like drinking it in. And so there is that discussion as well, a lengthy discussion to be had over there in terms of what exactly is the equivalency of rubbing something into your skin, and is it really like eating, is it really like drinking? That is another discussion to be had. Again, not in the course of the Daf Yomi, but just something interesting to think about. And to research. Okay, we're starting with the Gemara. So there are four halachas that were taught to us in the Mishnah. And so the Gemara today is going to be spending all of its time with the first halacha. And I say today, I mean tomorrow. And Peches as well. So we are going to be spending time on this first halacha, Polata Shechva Zara. Reisha Deloka Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Sefika Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So the Gemara now notes a contradiction in the Mishnah, because the first part of the Mishnah, meaning the first halacha mentioned in the Mishnah, is not going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Now, we're not supposed to know that yet, because we don't know Rav Elazar ben Azariah's position regarding poleta shechva zera, a woman discharging the zera out of her body. So we don't know what he holds yet, but for now, let's just simply say it's not the position of our Mishnah. We're going to learn together in just a couple of minutes from now that according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, there only needs to be a 2-day waiting period, not a 3-day waiting period as articulated in our Mishnah. We're going to see that clearly. So we know that the first part of our Mishnah is not going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. On the other hand, the next section of the Mishnah, that having to do with the Bris Milah, that is going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Now, we don't know that yet as well, meaning our Mishnah are just giving us anonymous statements that our Mishnah did not give any attribution. Nevertheless, as Rashi points out, we are going to see together later in the Masechta that this idea that you can heat up water on the third day, that is in fact going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And so what we have over here is, knowing the attribution based on other sources, we have now in our Mishnah an inconsistency. The first halacha in our Mishnah is not going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. The second one is, and that is an inconsistency. And the Gemara now just spells this out. Deika Rav Elazar ben Azariah tahara shamin alei. So, because if the first halacha was going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, what occurs on the third day, post relations with one's husband, on the third day one is tahara, not tamea. So we have an inconsistency in our Mishnah. So what do you do? So there are two schools of thought. And these two schools of thought, Rashi points out, you could see this clearly in Bava Metzia and Daf Mem Aleph, and we're going to see it today's Daf as well, in that when I have a Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah, which has an inconsistency in it, so there are two strategies in terms of how to solve. One strategy of how to solve it is that what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to say that, look, really our Mishnah represents one Tana. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi put these Mishnahs together and strung different ideas together in one Mishnah, we assume that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had consistency, and that he subscribed in that particular Mishnah to one Tana's viewpoint. Now, over here in our Mishnah, that's going to be very problematic because it doesn't read as one Tana. But that's one strategy. And within that strategy, with that assumption, so what are you going to have to do with our Mishnah? So you're going to have to do something which is radical, and that is that we're going to have to assume that the Mishnah is corrupted, and we're going to have to change the gears of the Mishnah. And I say we, by the way, there's no you and I that's going to be changing the girsa of the Mishnah, but the Amorayim in this school of thought are going to be changing the girsa of the Mishnah, assuming that our Mishnah is going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah in total. That's one strategy. And the other strategy is going to be simply saying, look, do not touch a letter of the Mishnah. The text of the Mishnah has been read and proofread again and again. And Rav Yehuda HaNasi just simply is making a compilation over here. On one point, he's subscribing to one Tana. And another point, he's subscribing to another Tana. That's another strategy. But then, of course, we lose that consistency of it's all following one viewpoint, one Tana. It's not. That's another strategy. And so the Gemara simply says, fine. These are two different, legitimate schools of thought. in terms of how to learn a Mishnah. And the Gemara now is just going to articulate, that's what we're going to have to simply say over here. It depends on which school of thought you subscribe to. So if I'm going to go with the former school of thought, that really aren't time Mishnahs like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, so we are going to have to do some editing. And that means to say that when we read the first halacha in our Mishnah, now in our Mishnah, the word is Tamea, we're going to actually edit it to say Tahora. Because Rav Elazar ben Azariah is of the opinion that a woman is only going to be Tamea for 2 days, not for 3 days, and on day three she'll be Tahora. So that obviously is I say radical approach. It's not radical, meaning this is a legitimate school of thought amongst the Amoraim. And if I subscribe to that school of thought, so then you're going to edit the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is going to read Tahora. So now the entire series of this Mishnah is going to be going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. If, however, I subscribe to the latter school of thought, that we could just simply say that our Mishnayos are following different Tanayim, fine. The first halacha in our Mishnah, Paletu Shech Vazera, is going like the Chachamim. The second halacha in our Mishnah regarding bathing on the third day is going like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Okay, Adkan. So, a discrepancy in our Mishnah of who the author of our Mishnah is, and two different approaches in terms of how to deal with that. Tana Rabbanan, we are continuing in the Gemara, Pei Vav Amud Aleph. We are a little less than halfway down on the Amud. Paletu Shech Vazera, B'yama Shlishi Tahora, Divrei Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So here we have the Braisa now going to be describing a woman, after having had relations with her husband, at what point in time is she no longer considered a Paletu Shech Vazera, or otherwise stated, the Zera that was inserted in her is now going to be leaking out of her, it's going to be discharging out of her. And at what point in time does it no longer have potency? It no longer is going to be a source of tumah, and it no longer will interrupt her shiv nikiyum. So, according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, 2 days, meaning on the third day, she would be considered tahora. The zera that comes out of her is going to be considered tahor. Rabbi Yishmael, Amar Pamim Shein Dala Onos, Pamim Shein Hey Onos, Pamim Shein Vav Onos. According to Rabbi Yishmael, sometimes it's 4 onas, and ona is a 12-hour period. So 2 onas is 24 hours, 4 onas is 48 hours. So sometimes it's 48 hours, sometimes it's 60 hours, and sometimes it's 72 hours. Now, what does he mean by that? I'm going to explain it much better in just a moment. And finally, the sheet of Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Kiva Amar Lo'olam, hey, it's always going to be 5 onas, which comes out to a total of 60 hours. The imyatza mixas ona rishona, no salam mixas ona shishis. And so that means that if the relations occurred during ona number one, however many hours occurred into ona number one, you simply go into the sixth ona, and what you're going to do is that you're going to counterbalance on the sixth ona, meaning to say that according to Rabbi Akiva, you need 60 hours. It's not going to be a function of day, it's going to be a function of hours, so you just simply count 60 hours. It's just another way of counting 60 hours is that in ona number one, you figure out where you are in terms of how many hours have gone into that first ona. Then you move over to the sixth ona, and you just simply add that to the sixth ona, which means that you're going to come out to 60 hours in total. So, there are 3 opinions over here in this braisa regarding when a woman is no longer going to be considered a poleta shechva zera, or to better say it, at what point in time the zera is going to come out of her on day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5. The zera is going to be constantly being discharged out of her. At what point is the Zera considered no longer a source of Tumah and is no longer going to disrupt her in terms of her ability to count Shiv Nikiyim? And the 3 opinions in this Braisa we just learned together, 1, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, only for days 1 and 2. Now when I say day over here, as we're going to clearly articulate, it is going to be irrespective of when she had relations with her husband. It's just simply the day she had relations, that's day 1. The next day is going to be day 2. And according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that's it. From day 3, it could be at any point during day 3 where she's discharging, and that zera coming out of her is tahor. She is tahora from day 3 and onward. Let's say it like that. And according to Rabbi Shmuel, it is going to be 3 days. Now, the Braisa has an interesting way of articulating it. I'm going to explain the Braisa in just a moment. But I'm just right now presenting the Shitas in a nice, easy manner. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's going to be 3 days, which means the day she had relations with her husband, that's day one. The next day is day two. The next day is day three. After day three, she is no longer, that zera coming out of her is no longer has potency. And is no longer going to be tamei. That is the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. So according to the sheetas of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Shmuel, it's a function of day. It's not a function of hours. The unit of measuring is going to be day. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, 2 days. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's going to be 3 days, irrespective of how many hours it is. It's just simply counted by days. And then there's a third sheetah in the Braisa, and that's Rabbi Kiva, and that is, no, you don't count it by days, you count it by hours. How many hours in total? 60 hours. And so therefore, you have to precisely pinpoint when the relations occurred, either during the night, during the day, and then from there you move 60 hours. Within the 60 hours, the zera is potent, and therefore going to be tamei. After 60 hours, the zera is no longer potent, and therefore no longer going to be tamei. Those are the three opinions articulated in the Braisa. Now, for just a moment, let's explain the language used by Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says sometimes it is 4 owners, sometimes it's 5 owners, sometimes it's 6 owners. What Rabbi Shmuel means by that is as follows. You count the unit by days, not by hours. And so, therefore, in terms of hours, it can sometimes express itself as 4 owners, which is 48 hours. Sometimes it can go 5 owners, 60 hours. Sometimes it can be counted as 6 owners, which is 72 hours. But the only reason why there's that variability is because it's really not a function of hours, it's a function of days. Let's give an example. Let's say husband and wife had relations on late Wednesday afternoon. Now, according to Rabbi Shmuel, late Wednesday afternoon, so what does that mean? It means it's before Shkia, before sunset on Wednesday night. So late Wednesday afternoon, so Wednesday now counts as day number one. That means Thursday is going to be day number two, and Friday is going to be day number three. So that means that at the end of Friday, she will now be Tahora. The Zera coming out of her is no longer going to be Zera that is Tame. That means now that how many hours have gone by? That's 48 hours. That's if they had relations, if husband and wife had relations on Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon. A little bit more than 48 hours, but you get the point. It's about 48 hours. Let's say they had relations on Wednesday morning. They had relations on Wednesday morning. So that means that you're going through the entire 12-hour section of Wednesday. Wednesday still counts as day one. Thursday's day two. Friday's day three. So now you have 60 hours. Okay, but still, it comes out to those same 3 days. And now, right, I'm sure now you're following with me. Now, let's say they had relations on Tuesday night. So they had relations on Tuesday night. So halachically, Tuesday night is Wednesday. So that means that in terms of days, it's still the same. Wednesday is day number one, Thursday is day number two, Friday is day number three, but now, because they had relations on Tuesday night, so now that means it's going to be a 72-hour period in which the zera that comes out of her is going to be tameh. This is all according to the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. And so the range over here from 48 to 72 hours is just simply a function of Rabbi Shmuel is not counting it based on hours, he's counting it based on day, which means then that it gives that kind of variability where it could range anywhere from 48 to 72 hours. And by the way, just going back to Rav Elazar ben Azariah is actually in a total agreement that you count by days. It's just that his point of dissension is that you're not counting 3 days, you're counting 2 days. The day you have relations is day one. The next day is day number two. And it's going to be now the third day she'll be Tahara. So if you want to express this in hours, the Gemara didn't do this, the Braisa didn't do this, but we could do this if you want to express it in hours. So it's going to range anywhere from 2 anas, up to 4 onas. We're doing the same thing that we did for Rabbi Shmuel. It just happens to be that you're just taking it down by 1 day, which is now going to be anywhere in a range from 24 hours to 48 hours. Okay. Good. So and so we have now in this Braisa 3 opinions in terms of when the Zera is going to no longer be Tame. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you count it by days. Days of relation is one. Next day is also going to be Tameya, third day Tahora. And by the way, now you understand. Now we go back to the Mishnah. When we saw the Mishnah and noted the discrepancy between halacha number one and halacha number two of our Mishnah, so one way to resolve it is to take the word Tameya and turn it into Tahora, and now that is properly reflecting the viewpoint of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Okay. Now that is Shita number one. Shita number two is Rabbi Shmuel. 3 days, you count by days. And sheet number 3 is Rabbi Kiva. It's 60 hours, and you must count by hours, not by days. The Gemara now is going to try and explain the sources of all three of these positions. Amar Rabban Kamei de Rav Papa Varmi La Rav Papa La Rav Abishla Amar Rav Elazar Ben Azariah Ki Rabbanan De Amri Ba Avid Prisha. So I'm sorry, De Amri Behe Avid Prisha Rabbi Shmuel Ki Rabbi Yosi De Amar Bidalit Avid Prisha. So the Gemara says, in terms of understanding the shitas of Rav Elazar Ben Azariah and Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara says, I understand where they get it from, and that's the following. And here now we go to Mamad Har Sinai. Between today and tomorrow, we're going to be spending a lot of time in the 19th perek of Sefer Shmos, Parshas Yisro, Perek Yotes. So the Gemara is going to be spending a lot of time in that perek. We are going to go through the details of this in tomorrow's daf. We'll get up today to the end of Pevav Amid Beis, right up to the point where the Gemara is going to dissect the psukim and see the psukim inside in terms of what day of the week it was. Right now, let's say it nice and simple. And that is that we got to Har Sinai either on Sunday or on Monday. In the Pesukim itself, it does not say. And as we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, there is a debate between the Chachamim and Rav Yossi when exactly they got to Har Sinai. And the debate is going to be either we got there on a Sunday or on a Monday. Based on that, the calendar for the rest of the week is going to be affected by what day we got to Har Sinai. Right now, let's just also say, simply, that we received the Torah on Shabbos, and that's L'kulei Amah, that's according to everybody. And so, it happens to be this year Shavuos works out in that Rosh Chodesh was on a Sunday, and that means to say that the day of Shavuos, the sixth day, comes out on a Friday. Rosh Chodesh was on a Sunday, and that means that Shavuos falls out on a Friday. That is only going to confuse us. So right now, let's just say the sixth day of Sivan comes out on a Friday, which means that the seventh day comes out on Shabbos. According to everybody, we receive the Torah on Shabbos. Okay, so what is open now for debating is the following. The Torah's instructions were that for Mamad Har Sinai, that means that everyone's going to be having divine revelation. Everyone is going to be a Navi for that Shabbos. And there needs to be Hachana, there needs to be preparation. As part of the preparation, husbands and wives have to separate from one another. How long a separation do they have from one another? This is going to be part of the debate between Rav Yossi and the Chachamim. Either they had a two-day separation from one another or a three-day separation from one another. So the Gemara says, fine. Now that works out, meaning now we can explain two of the three opinions that we already saw. According to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, they subscribe to the Chachamim. They say that what day was separation required? On Thursday, which means Thursday separation, Friday separation. Shabbos, we're now prepared to receive the Torah. So you see that you need a two-day hiatus from one another so that they're not tummy. Meaning, why not a separation on Wednesday? There's no need. Because according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, there's only need for 2 days of separation because any of the Zerah discharging her after the second day is going to be Tahara. Whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel says that there is going to be a 3 day separation, meaning that they were instructed to separate husband and wife on Wednesday of that week. So that means that Wednesday is day one, Thursday is day two, Friday is day three. There needs to be 3 days of separation. Good. So the shitas of Rav Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Shmuel of the Braisa are going to coordinate with the opinions of the Chachamim and Rav Yossi in terms of how many days of separation is needed. And again, the details of that are going to come up really in tomorrow's daf. But according to Rabbi Kiva, come on, but who's Rabbi Kiva holding like? Because Rabbi Kiva is not charting this based on days. He's charting it based on hours. Well, how do you arrive at that? Meaning the assumption the Gemara is making now is that he too also uses Mamad Har Sinai as the platform, as the source in terms of how we know that the Zerah coming out of the woman is going to be Tamei, but how is he getting to 60 hours? I understand how you get to days. I don't understand, says the Gemara, how you get to hours. La'olam ki Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says that we're going to say that Rabbi Kiva falls like Rav Yossi. Now Rav Yossi says that the week is scheduled where Rosh Chodesh fell on a Sunday. The instructions for Prisha come down on Wednesday. And Rabbi Kiva agrees to Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says, okay, now how do we get from there to 60 hours? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Kedamer Rav Ada Brava. So in order to appreciate this, we're going to have to subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Ada Brava, which is Moshe Bashkama Allah Bashkama Yared. That whenever Moshe went up, and tomorrow's daf, we're going to go over the schedule of the week in terms of Moshe going up, Moshe coming down, Moshe going up, Moshe coming down, shuttling the information between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. And all the details we're going to go over in tomorrow's daf. But according to Rav Ada Ba'ava, every communication occurred in the morning. The Hashkama in the morning, he went up. The Hashkama the following morning, he came back down again. Hashkama Allah, and how do I know that? So Rav Ada Ba'ava signing the Pesukim, Dichsiv the Pasuk says, Vayishke Moshe Baboker, Vayal El Har Sinai. So the Pasuk says that he went up, Vayashkim, he went up in the morning. Now, Bahashkama Yara Dichsiv, Lech Rei Valisa, Atava Aron Imach, Mekish Yerida La'aliyah. So you see that there's a hekesh between going up and coming down. Ma'aliyah Bahashkama, Af Yerida Bahashkama. Just like going up occurs in the morning, the Yerida also occurs in the morning as well. Fine. So that means to say now that according to Rabbi Kiva, we're going to assume that the instructions of Prisha occurred on Wednesday. But now we can pinpoint when on Wednesday. It occurred on Wednesday morning. Now we're going to be going 60 hours from Wednesday morning. So that is going to take us from Wednesday morning, meaning Wednesday, that's 12, Thursday, the eve of Thursday, that's 2, Thursday, that's 3, Thursday night, the eve of Friday, that's 4, and Friday, and that's going to be number 5. That's the fifth owner, which is going to get us to 60 hours. So assuming this schedule, assuming this calendar, we now have a source for Rabbi Akiva. Now the Gemara goes on, Lama Leila Meimer Lehu, V'amar Avuna Yisrael Kedoshim Ein Ve'em Hashem Shem Mitosem Bayom. So the Gemara over here has a technical question, and that is, the instructions for Prisha came on Wednesday morning. Why does it have to come on Wednesday morning? Husband and wife are not having relations during the day. We learned this back in Masechta Nida. The Jewish people are holy people. So when are husband and wife going to have relations with one another? In a private moment of time, which is nighttime. And Yisrael and the Jewish people are Kedoshim, and they're holy people. And they're not having relations. The husband and wife are not having relations during the day in an immodest fashion. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's true. But the Gemara says, but it's possible for a husband and wife to have relations during the day, meaning the issue is modesty. So the Gemara says you can construct scenarios in which husband and wife can be modest even during the day. If you black out the room, right, in Israel you have the trisim, so husband and wife can be together during the daytime. Rav Papa teaches us a tamachachem will conduct himself modestly with his wife, even during the daytime, even if you don't black out the room, covering the two of them with sheets. So it's possible that they're going to have relations, husband and wife, during the day. And so just a technical issue of why does Moshe have to instruct Prisha already in the morning? And the answer is because there is possibility for husband and wife to have relations during the day. Continuing now to the top of Pevav Amud Beis, V'ha Tvula Yom Ninhu. Now, when did they tov on the mikvah? So when did they tov on the mikvah? Here's our assumption, according to everybody, that's the way Rashi presents it, according to everybody, meaning we have now three opinions, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva. Now they all subscribe to this idea that there needed to be Prisha separation, and then making sure that the women are not polet to Shechva Zera. Now how long a separation? Good, we just went over the debate, but at the conclusion of the separation, then they then tov on the mikvah. Now, it happens to be that men could have toveled right away, meaning the moment they stopped being with their wives, they could tovel right away. But the assumption is that everybody toveled at the same time. And when did they tovel? They toveled Friday night. Like we said, everybody's in agreement that the Torah was given on Shabbos. And that means to say that their tefillah to prepare now for Mamad Har Sinai, for communication directly with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so their tefillah was on Friday night. Because on Friday night now, whatever the Prisha period is, whether it be 2 days, whether it be 3 days, whether it be 60 hours, everyone is in agreement that it concludes on Friday night. They tovel the mikvah. They tovel on the mikvah now on Friday night. Now the Gemara says they tovel on Friday night. That creates a bit of a problem. As we all know, we go over this time and again. The process of Tahara means what? The process of Tahara is a two-step process. With exception to Tumas Mace, the process for Tahara is the following two steps. One, you tovel on the mikvah. Two, you have to experience Harav Shemesh. You have to experience sunset. So the optimal time to tovel on the mikvah would therefore be a little bit short while before sunset. So now you tov on the mikvah and you experience Erev Shemesh. But those two steps in that sequence is absolutely necessary. And that means to say that, let's say you tovled in the morning, so you're not yet fully tahor until that evening you have Erev Shemesh. Or let's even go further back. Let's say you tovled at night. If you tovled at night, so that means that you're not fully tahor until you experience the following day and the following evening Erev Shemesh. So those are the two-step processes. Now, what is the status of a person between between tovling in the mikvah and Erev Shemesh? So that is in halacha referred to as a tvul yom. We go over this time and again throughout Shas. Now, what is the status of this person? He is still somewhere in between being tame and being tahor. He's in a gray area of tama. Some of the tama has been removed, but until Erev Shemesh, the total tama has not yet been removed. And so the Gemara says, so even with everybody, with their calendars, having the men and women waiting a certain amount of time, and then tovling in the mikvah on Friday night, but the problem is now going to be that although they are tahor, they are not tahor legamre. And they will not be tahor legamre until Moshe Shabbos, after they experience Erev Shemesh. And so that's the Gemara's question on the top of Pei Vav Amud Beis, about Tvul Yom Ninhu, they are all in the state of being a Tvul Yom. So Abaye bar Ravin bar Chinen bar Avin Darmi Tavayu Nitna Torah L'Tvul Yom. So the Gemara says that's good enough for the purposes of communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and as far as Kabbalah Satorah on Shabbos, the fact that they're Tvul Yom and it removed a level, a degree of their Tumah, that is sufficient. In other words, the question was premised on the idea that they have to be Tar Lagamre, and the answer of the Gemara is they don't have to be Tar Lagamre. It's sufficient that they removed that first layer of Tumah. Yas Mareimer v'kamel haShmita. Now Mareimer went over just what we learned together, and Amalei Ravina Mareimer Nina Kamart or Ruuya Kamart. Now, the Gemara has a follow-up question. It really is a historical one, which is, so the halacha now I understand is that they could have had Mamad Har Sinai if they were all Tful Yom. Does that mean that potentially they were Tful Yom, or does it mean that it was actual that they were Tful Yom? And to which the Gemara says, Amalei Ruuya Kamina. I just simply mean potentially. But in practice, in actuality, nobody was a Tvul Yom. Meaning that they all tovled on Friday, at the end of Friday before Shabbos, and nobody experienced any kind of discharge into Friday night, requiring another tefillah on Friday night. But at least in principle, in theory, even if that were to happen, and even if they had a tovel in the mikvah on Friday night, that would have been sufficient, because a Tvul Yom is ready to receive the receive the Torah and have Kabbalah Torah and at Mamad Har Sinai. Okay, and how do you know that? I mean, the only way you know that is only via a Mesorah. He doesn't bring any Rai, any proof in the Torah that this is in fact so, but he says that in principle the halach is true. In practice, they didn't need it. V'lit v'lo b'nishimsha v'lit v'lo Torah b'nishimsha. Gemara has another follow-up question. Look, they're all toveling on Friday night. So if they're all toveling on Friday night, they're ready for Kabbalah Satorah. They're ready for communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu on Friday night. So why didn't they have the Maamad Har Sinai experience on Friday night? So the Gemara says, Amar Yitzhak Lomi Rosh B'Seisi Dibarti. So the Gemara says, no, because that's not the way Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to present himself to Klal Yisrael. When the Jewish people were there having national communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so it wanted to be during a public time, i.e. during the day, not at night. The Gemara says, "V'lit b'lu b'tzafra d'shabasa, v'lit b'lu tor b'tzafra d'shabasa." So why do they tovel in the morning on Shabbos morning? Meaning, why do they all tovel on Friday night? In other words, if we know anyway that Mamad Har Sinai is going to be taking place during the day, during Shabbos day, so why not have everybody tovel on Shabbos morning? Am Rav Yitzchak shelo yehi halalu hochin lekabel Torah v'halalu hochin letzvila. So the Gemara says it just will create a traffic jam. Some people are walking one direction for Kabbalah Satorah, another group is walking towards the mikvah. And by the way, mikvah and Har Sinai, so my assumption would be, the Gemara doesn't say this, but my general assumption would be that the Bear Miriam creates enough water, right? The Bear Miriam created streams throughout the entire encampment to the Jewish people. It creates enough water where there's a possibility for everyone to tovel. That would be my assumption. Could be I'm right. Anyway, So it would just create too much traffic, too much confusion. Everybody tovels on Friday night. Everyone's ready for Kabbalah Satorah on Shabbos day. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Rabbi Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, continuing now in the Gemara, Pei Vav Amud Beis, Zu de Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Kiva. Ava Chalchamim Omrim, Sheish Ono Shlemos Be'inan. So what do we have so far? We've had three opinions in terms of how long a woman post-relations with her husband is going to be considered Polata Shechva Zera. We had the opinions of Rabbi Shmuel, which is 2 days. Sorry. Rabbi Shmuel, which is 3 days. We had the sheet of Rabbi Kiva, 60 hours. We also, it's interesting, the Gemara doesn't mention over here, we also had Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, which is 2 days, but according to the Chachamim, it's going to be 6 Ono Shlemos. We are now introducing ourselves now to the fourth opinion in terms of how long a woman needs to be post-relation so that the Zera is no longer Tamei. And here in this fourth opinion, 72 hours. That is the sheet of the Chachamim. The Amar Rav Chista Machlokes Shapir Shem and Isha. Aval Pir Shem and Ish Tamei Kol Zman Shehilacha. The Gemara now makes the point. I said this in the introduction to the Mishnah, but here the Gemara articulates that this is only open for a debate. When the Zera was inserted into the woman, now discharging out of the woman, so then its shelf life, if you will, is only going to be two days, 3 days, 60 hours, 72 hours, depending on who you follow. But that's true only when the zera is inside of a woman. However, when the zera comes out of the man and wasn't in the woman, so there the tumah is going to extend as long as that zera is moist. So then the tumah can exist in theory much longer as long as it remains moist. So why inside of a woman does it have a shorter shelf life? So like we already articulate, but the Gemara here is going to be very clear. The reason why is because inside of a woman, the assumption is that there's a tremendous amount of heat generating on that zera, and therefore gives it a much shorter shelf life. Mesa Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes asked the following question based on the Braisa. The Braisa quotes the pasuk, V'chol beged, v'chol or, asher ye'alav shechva zera. So when the beged, with the clothing, or the hide, has on it shechva zera, prat, l'shechva zera she'isrucha. But once the shechva zera is putrid, it no longer is going to be a source of tumah. My love shapir shamina ish. Now, the assumption over here is that it's still moist, but it's no longer going to be a source of tumah. And the another assumption is that we're talking about zera that came directly from the man and was not within a woman. Now, if our assumptions are correct, that now presents a problem. Because we're saying that even though it's moist, but because it is srucha, it is now putrid, so it is no longer going to be a source of tumah. The Gemara says, Lo Shapir Shemina Isha. So the Gemara says, okay, but our assumptions aren't right. In other words, one of the assumptions we're going to change is that we're talking about Zera that was inside of a woman. A Zera inside of a woman is going to become putrid. When? So there are now four opinions in which to look at. Well, whichever opinion, in other words, there's a shelf life. And so after the shelf life is over, 2 days, 3 days, 60 hours, 72 hours, after that period of time, it is no longer going to be considered potent. It is what the Braisa just described as being srucha. That's what the Braisa is describing. The Gemara asks what seems to us to be a strange question, but we can put aside the context for just a moment and just look at the question with blinders on. Let's say the zera of a Jewish man is found inside of a non-Jewish woman, i.e., a Jewish man cohabited with a non-Jewish woman. The question is strange. The premise of the question is strange, but the Gemara, we're just going to put blinders on and look at why it may be different. Yisrael de dagi ben mitzvos chavu gufayu. So it happens to be that Jewish women, so they have to worry. Okay, I know, insert joke over here, in terms of the general anxiety and stress of the Jewish women, but then for that matter, Jewish men also are pretty good at anxiety and stress. But the Gemara points out that, look, the truth of the matter is that Jewish women, as men as well, so they have anxiety because we have the responsibility of keeping the mitzvos. And so that responsibility creates a certain amount of anxiety. And the Gemara is suggesting maybe that anxiety translates into a warmer environment, one that is going to spoil the zera that much quicker. Alkum de lo dagi ben mitzvos lo. But maybe when it comes to the non-Jew, he lives a more freer lifestyle. And so maybe it doesn't have that much anxiety. And maybe the incubation of the zera inside of the non-Jewish woman will not be the same as that inside of a Jewish woman. Or the Gemara says, or maybe no. maybe you have to take into consideration diet, meaning that when it comes to the diet of the non-Jew, they're eating shkatzim v'ramasim, and so maybe their diets aren't the same. So we also can't compare incubation periods inside with the zera inside of a Jewish woman as opposed to the zera inside of a non-Jewish woman. And the Gemara says, okay, well, we have to look at their diet. And let's assume that because they're eating non-kosher food, so therefore it is going to create a different environment for the zera inside of her. So the questions now get even stranger. Let's say the zera is inside of an animal. So, and yes, that of course means that then we're describing an act between a man and an animal. And I know that's very strange, but again, just let's put blinders on and let's just look at the question from just the perspective of, is the environment for the zera going to be different inside of an animal? So the islay prusdor masrachas of abehema de islay prusdor lo odim lo shnat teku. And over here, the Gemara just simply points to the anatomy, meaning when you have a woman, you have a prusdor, you have a canal. When you have an animal, there is no prusdor, there's no canal. And so the Gemara says, so maybe that is a consideration. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question as unresolved. Admittedly, a strange area to explore in terms of the question of Shechva Zera, but the Gemara is just dealing with, is it going to be different based on the environment? Is it considered that different environments are going to affect the Zera differently? That is, in essence, what the Gemara is asking. Admittedly, the cases are strange, to say the least. Okay, we're going to stop over here because this is going to begin the Gemara's detailed account in terms of the encampment in Mamad Har Sinai that week. It either started on a Sunday or on a Monday. We're going to go over all those details in the beginning of tomorrow's daf. Let's quickly recap our daf. We started with the Mishnah this morning on Peivavim and Aleph. We went through four different halachas that follow the construct of this ninth parak of the Masechta, where we come to a halacha, a rem is an allusion is found, either in the Chumash or in the Navi. Four different halachas were recorded in our Mishnah. One, Poleta Shechva Zera, when a woman is discharging the Zera after she and her husband had relations, so the Zera is going to come out of her. So how long after they had relations is the Zera going to be, have potency, and therefore going to be a source of Tumah? So in our Mishnah, 3 days. The second halacha in our Mishnah is washing the baby who had a Milah. You may do so day one, day two, up to day three, even though that means that you're going to be cooking the water on Shabbos, but the child is post-surgery critical care, and so therefore you're allowed to bathe the water in order to, you're allowed to heat up the water, in order to wash the area, and that can be done even on the third day. An allusion to that is found by Anshei Shechem with Shimon and Levi. The third halacha in our Mishnah is that that you tie the red strip to the, not only to the Sira Meshalech, but also you take part of that strip and you tie it now to an area in the base of Mikdash or to the stone that's right at the edge of the cliff. And how do I know that? A rem is an allusion is found in the beginning of Sefer Yeshayo. And the fourth halacha of our Mishnah is that rubbing oil into your skin is tantamount to drinking. On Yom Kippur, it would be a violation of Eno and Yom Kippur. Where do I see that the two are connected? The Pasuk in Tehillim alludes to that. In terms of the Gemara on the Amud Aleph, we discuss, first of all, the inconsistency of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah is not following Rav Elazar ben Azariah Shita throughout. Second halacha is following. First halacha is not following. So the Gemara says two schools of thought of how to go in terms of how to deal with such an inconsistency. We talked about this morning at length how long Zera is going to be considered potent while inside the woman, so that as it's discharging out of her, it's still going to be Tameh. And you have a range of position in the Braisa we saw in the Amud Aleph, three opinions. The first two opinions is that it's not a function of hours, it's a function of days. You have first the Shita of Rav Elazar ben Azariah, the day they have relations is day one. The following day now is considered day two. After day two, the Zera coming out of her is not going to be Tameh. And that means to say that in terms of hours, it obviously is going to take a range because it's not a function of hours, it's a function of days. Similarly, Rabbi Shmuel says the same thing. He just simply adds one more day. The day they have relations, husband and wife, that's day one. Next day is day two. Next day is day three. After day three, it's going to be Tahara. And our Mishnah seems to be following the position of Rabbi Shmuel. And the third opinion we saw in the Braisa is Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva looks at it as a function of hours. It's 60 hours after having had relations, and it's not going to be a function of days. It's a function of hours. So you have to mark, husband and wife have to mark the hour when they had relations, and it's going to be for the next 60 hours that any discharge that she had is going to be tamei. That zera coming out of her is going to be tamei. Where is all this coming from? Mamad Har Sinai. We know that at Mamad Har Sinai, there was a mitzvah prisha. It is a question of when the mitzvah prisha was given. There are two options. We're going to discuss it in great detail tomorrow. But right now, we learned this morning that it's either going to be on Wednesday or it's going to be on Thursday. So if it's Wednesday, that is the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. If it's Thursday, that's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. What about Rabbi Akiva in 60 hours? So the Gemara says we can support that as well. Because that we know Moshe came down on Wednesday morning, according to Rabbi Yossi. And so instructions of the preacher were given on Wednesday morning. And from there, we counted 60 hours to get to Friday evening. So from Wednesday morning until Friday evening is 60 hours. That would support the position of Rabbi Akiva, of course, assuming that it goes like Rabbi Yossi. That was all the Amud Aleph. On the Amud Beis, a number of follow-up questions in terms of, we toveled in the mikvah on Friday night. If that's true, are we not in a status of tefillah yom for Shabbos morning? The answer is, that's fine. In other words, the requirement to have communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is to remove the first level of tumah, but not necessarily the second level of tumah, and we could be in a state of tefillah yom. Practically speaking, the Gemara says they weren't, but certainly they could have been in a state of tefillah yom. Follow-up questions, how come the Torah wasn't given on Friday night, meaning we were all ready, we all toveled in the mikvah? Pasuk Yishayahu lo mirosh b'seisa dibarti. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted divine revelation to be in a public venue. By the way, an important idea just in terms of the genesis of our Yadus is that it wasn't in some sort of clandestine meeting between some prophet and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The idea is that it was public for the entire Jewish people to have a communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is divine revelation. That is national divine revelation, which I didn't make a big enough deal, is a cornerstone of our belief system. The Gemara asked the question, why don't we tefillah on Shabbos morning? And the Gemara says simply because it's not practical. The Gemara described it as simply being it's too messy. People are going towards Kabbalah Satorah. Some people are going to tefillah in the mikvah. It'd be better if everyone tefillah by Friday night. We learned on the Amud Beis there's actually a fourth opinion, and that it is a 72-hour period from the time of relations that is unlike any of the opinions that we saw in the Amud Aleph. So in total, there really are four opinions in terms of how long the Zera is considered potent after husband and wife had relations. And then the difference between the Zera being coming directly out of the man, where there the Tumah continues until it is no longer moist, but while moist, the Tumah, the Zera will be Tameh, as opposed to the woman where the Zera is inside of her. Again, like we said in the beginning of Shir today, while inside of her, the Zera is not Tameh because that's Tumah Blua. But once it comes out, it's going to be Tameh, but it has a shelf life. Again, four opinions of how long that shelf life is, but it has. Why? Because of the internal heat within the woman, which is going to act on the Zera and basically putrefy it after either 2 days or 3 days or 60 hours or 72 hours. And then the Gemara had a series of questions of, what if the incubation environment was different? I.e. the Zera was inside of a non-Jewish woman. I.e. the Zera was inside of an animal. Would that be different? The Gemara leaves these questions unresolved. We start tomorrow at the two dots.